Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I'm very happy to have as my guest today Fanny Howe. Fanny Howe has written many novels, books of poetry, and books of essays and memoir. Her new book is called Love and I. It's a beautiful book. It's published by Grey Wolf Press. Dan Chasen, a literary critic, said that the title, in this title, love is zero, as in tennis. And so love and I is zero and one. Had you constructed it that way? Or had he surprised you?
I had not thought of the tennis connection at all. I was surprised. But the strange thing is, it works. It's just like when you do a crossword puzzle and you put in the wrong word and it's fine. Everything else falls in.
It works so well, and yet the poems are about love and the failure of love and the transformation of love over the years. You're now nearly 80, and you're writing about the transformation of love over these 60 years of writing poetry. To what degree does interpretation and misinterpretation matter?
To me, it doesn't actually matter, because the sort of point when I could say the poem was done for me is conclusive, and it doesn't matter what happens afterwards. So I think the other night I was saying I basically would write it down and throw it over my shoulder and not look back to see what people say or how they look at it or read it.
And is that true?
That's the truth. I don't cling to my poems.
One of the poems in this book was published in a chapbook by a friend of mine who runs Song Cave Press. And over time, the poems have changed considerably. How do you know when a poem is done?
When I don't look at it again. That's all I can say. Uh-huh. I will go back endlessly, forever, revising a poem to get just a little beat right, drop a word 1 meter down. It's never done.
They're very beautiful, the poems in this book. Is beauty an occasion for revision? Are they revised to become more beautiful?
Yes, I suppose they are, now that you say it. I mean, to me, beauty is everything. It's what you survive wars because of the beauty of the drop coming out of the faucet. So it's beauty to me is what I'm after.
I thought it would be interesting to read some of the poems from that section, which is called Lamb, and
at the very end.
At the very end, because I thought it was very beautiful. And in the chapbook, one of the poems is now in the poem that precedes it, called The First Church, I believe. Yes, The First Church. And it's interesting because the first poem of The Lamb, when I first read it, is the last poem of The First Church. And in it, the lamb is finally cooked. It gets turned into a burnt offering. And so the cooking of the lamb, the end of the lamb, precedes the poem about the lamb.
I believe in the resurrection.
It's wonderful, because I realized as I was reading that these poems have a living relationship to the poet and to the ordering of the poem, and that as you know these poems, and indeed your work, my guest, Fanny Howe, you know better and better how these poems have been created to be commentaries on not just one another, but your previous work and previous books. You've been writing these poems for your entire life.
That's right. That's, I think, why I said the other night, they're the ghosts of poems past.
Do people who think that they don't understand poetry, do they have to have read these earlier books? Do they need to know the embodiments that these are the ghosts of?
No, they don't. Each one, I hope, is like a little melody of its own. And the symphony is not important to me. The one I'm going to read now is also preceded by a section on children who have been basically abandoned. So the roast lamb follows from a picture of kind of devastation. Roast lamb, mint jelly, sprigs scenting the meat like incense. A burnt offering is the only one that love has pity for. Not rare or well done, but burned, burned, burned. And then I begin the last little section called The Lamb. The plurality of the apple makes us dare to pulp. Can we breed lambs without seeing meat? This is my body, I cannot eat. Once the lambs were tender towards the shepherd, now they shall want to take his eyes off them. Lamb unremembered, so many hanging and days spent fenced in, split lips for laughter to be released, or songs or bleats, memories ejected onto canvas or score, or brains where they burned their impressions in. Spray, dispersion, atoms, up close for crying. They had no bleat without a mother to create and hear it. Not the lamb, its fleece, eyes, meat, tongue, heart, are tied up for a factory. At first there were folds, now there are millions of mass-produced bundles of wool wrapped on hooks for the fridge and the loom. My shepherd's a figure invisible to all. The sheep, little siblings of no harm done. Bridal curls, pre-cotton in the clover. A smile without content, pink and sweet. From meadow to meadow, eternal grass. My shepherd of the flock, stay close. I can't breathe. Wherever you go twice is blessed.
Fanny Howe, reading the final sections of her newest book, Love and I. Now, I wanted the first poem there because of the lines, a burnt offering is the only one that love has pity for. And distinctions are made throughout this book of poems between pity and mercy. Pity, mercy, and love are three of the crucial terms. And the presence of a mother is the source of pity, mercy, and love in this book. There are fathers, too, and children. It's a book of parenthood, in a sense, yes?
Maternal, especially, yes.
Yes.
I have spent most of my life reading not so much poetry as theology. So everything I see, I'm thinking about where did it come from? Who made it? Why is it here? And that's sort of the endless drumbeat in my brain. So for me, reading about the burnt offering that God exacts from peoples and that people go on producing every Easter, I was wondering why burned. And I realized it was you had to suffer through life until you're almost nothing for God to recognize and take you back. So it's sort of the old thing of you can't be sort of in the middle for God or people to have much interest.
I read about you that approximately 30 years ago, you made a pledge to attend Mass regularly. What led you to make that decision?
All my life, I have been feeling something else around, and I kept trying different approaches to that. And finally, I married a man whose mother lived with us, and she was Catholic, so I would go with her to Mass, and basically she was the major influence. And at the same time, my husband and I read Simone Weil, who made a huge impact. So those two just coincided, and I went ahead.
When I hear something internally, did I hear it, or was it placed there? You know, this is something like the question of the presence of God in the world. But when I read about eternal grass, and my mind sings back to me eternal grace, what's happening?
It is a pun, of course, but it's also to me the truth that the grass is as good as the grace. I mean, they're both here forever. Everything is here forever.
I began reading novels, but although I had amazing, truly amazing teachers of poetry, I never knew how to read poetry. The novel was instinctive to me, and I could read, for instance, Thomas Hardy as a novelist. But when, for instance, the extraordinary poet James Wright came and taught Thomas Hardy as a poet, it took me forever to get to the point. And I still tell people, don't assume, because you don't understand it, that understanding was what was required.
Absolutely. That's, I think, why it's important to hear poems read aloud, because it's really the surface you're hearing, which is just as important as all the references buried and under the surface. To hear the poem, the music, the sound of the words, you're still hearing what the poet intended.
I am talking to Fanny Howe about her book, Love and I. I came to the point where I felt I couldn't live without poetry, even though I still felt I didn't understand it.
Right.
How do you, as a poet, teach people to be able to love it?
Well, I started knowing how to do that when I was teaching at MIT to students who were mathematicians and engineers, and I knew they had had no experience. So what I did was, then we had cassettes. I brought in my boombox and cassettes, and I would have them listen to half an hour of Robert Creeley, say, reading aloud, and then look at the poems on the page and try to see the missing link, because it can be missing. And he's a poet who's, to me, better heard than read. And there are many poets like that. That was what the first lesson, and I did go on using, the pen sound, using all the now available instruments of hearing people read.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about this because Robert Creeley was one of those teachers who was teaching where I went to school at Buffalo. Because, you know, I had not met, and many people haven't, a real-life poet. And when I got to college, there was Robert Creeley and Robert Haas and John Logan and Irving Feldman, very, very different kinds of poets. Carl Dennis, and then eventually a whole, would you say, flock gathering of experimental poets. We had, oh, you're going to, when you hear this, you're just going to say, take me there. We had William Carlos Williams's earliest papers and poems when they were very short, all of them preceding Patterson, preceding the desert music, the very short Williams poems. We had the papers in our school library because the library knew that they'd never be an antiquarian library. They were a brand new library. So they bought the papers of poets and writers. They had Joyce, they had William Carlos Williams, they had Robert Graves. So the thing you learned from Creeley was going out, drinking, and getting into fistfights. We were thrown out of more bars in Buffalo than there are bars in Buffalo. And Creeley was not only magnificent to hear reading, he was magnificent to see him doubling his dukes and fighting. And I thought that poets were supposed to be these gentle souls, pardon me, wimps, but not Creeley. And it was just wonderful. I would say to anyone who feels that he doesn't understand, he or she, who doesn't understand poems, go where poets are and go and do the things they do after the poetry reading. It's every bit as important.
Well, that's certainly true. And usually anyone who does go to a reading is hoping to go to a bar as fast as possible after it's over. But you're right about Buffalo. It also had a very good history with experimental music, of course.
Yes.
So it wasn't the first time they did something radical up there.
Oh, thank you for reminding me.
Yes,
Morton
yes.
Gould was there,
that's
too.
That's right.
And
yeah.
John Cage.
They were there. And that was in the atmosphere when,
it wasn't,
when the language poets arrived.
Now, Love and I, as a book, seems to me to be a book by someone who is presenting reasons to have once feared love. Is that correct?
That, in, you mean that I wrote it
As someone who'd overcome a fear of love.
Maybe overcome it. Maybe not.
Tell me what you mean.
I still know that love is, when it's passionate and erotic and romantic, is death. It's so dangerous. It can kill you. So I still know that that can happen, even though it's just a memory of things. But now, now that I have grandchildren and students and people I love without any greed or anything attached, I find it, of course, lifeblood.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Fanny Howe about her new book, Love and I. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Fanny Howe about her new book, Love and I. Now, I saw in this book poems that range virtually from your birth. You were born in 1940, but in the last months of 1940. After a kind of introductory poem called Allegories, there's a poem called 1941. And it takes place in Buffalo. And let's hear it.
That's fine. 1941. On a cold day near Lake Erie, I was in a double bind. The snow was like a lamb shorn in the upper circle. Someone pushed me over the ice and stones. Someone else chattered behind. A rubber nipple was pressed on my lips, gagged and spat until my tears were milk. Everything seemed like something else. The number of wheels was too large for my body to contain in a dream. But the silver bar could be seen to be long, with faces beaming in reflection from the land of the living. I thought I saw a flock impaled on a fence, then more clouds gone free overhead. Zero and one sat on either side of me. Was trapped in apparatus and a family like so many before and after. A central contradiction once discovered leads to collapse or evolution. The tremors in the heavens created weather. We all mentioned this for years when we met on our quest for happiness.
I think it's a beautiful poem and full of suggestions. For one thing, since it begins by mentioning Lake Erie, there's no one who was ever born or lived in Buffalo who doesn't talk about the weather that was created there. And you mention it for years when you meet on your quest for happiness, what it was like to live in the snows of Buffalo. It's But what's great to me is that side by side, there's a literal and metaphoric layer of this poem. And as you say, everything seemed like something else. So at first, we think someone pushed me over the ice and stones. How violent. But in fact, in impulse, in metaphor, it's being pushed in a carriage. And a rubber nipple was pressed on my lips, yes, gagged and spat until my tears were milk. Well, the baby is being fed. This isn't the nipple of biology. This is the nipple of the baby bottle, and yet it is the nipple of biology too. And the tears are turning to milk. And the poem is a return to babyhood. It's beautiful. And then, just when you think there couldn't be more, the silver bar could be seen to be long, with faces beaming in reflection. The bar of the carriage, with the mother or the nanny or the grandma's face reflected in it. So let's hear the poem again. And now I ask my listeners to hear the number of different enchantments that are being perpetrated in this poem.
1941. On a cold day near Lake Erie, I was in a double bind. The snow was like a lamb shorn in the upper circle. Someone pushed me over the ice and stones. Someone else chattered behind. A rubber nipple was pressed on my lips, gagged and spat until my tears were milk. Everything seemed like something else. The number of wheels was too large for my body to contain in a dream, but the silver bar could be seen to be long, with faces beaming in reflection. From the land of the living, I thought I saw a flock impaled on a fence, then more clouds, God-free, overhead. Zero and one sat on either side of me. Was trapped in apparatus and a family like so many before and after. A central contradiction, once discovered, leads to collapse or evolution. The tremors in the heavens created weather. We all mentioned this for years when we met on our quest for happiness.
This book, Love and I, is published by Grey Wolf Press. I think they are one of our very best literary presses. I'm crazy about them. Of their editor-in-chief, of the editors who work there, I've read many books and anthologies from Grey Wolf. This is one of many of your books they've published. At this time, when you've published for some time with a press and an editor, is it still a process, or are they publishing what you send them?
It's still a process. I'm still surprised when they say great, but I know that the editor, Jeff Schatz, will work with me on it, because there's always something I want to change, which drives him mad up until the last minute. So I never actually know when I give him the manuscript if that will be what appears. But he seems to grasp the substance of it.
Well, this book, Love and I, it's a beautiful book, and I, who only came late to the understanding of poetry, understood it from first to end. So I want to recommend highly that people who say, oh, I don't buy poetry books because I don't understand them, try this one, Love and I, by my guest Fanny Howe, because I think it will change at least a piece of your mind, and that's all that's necessary. Thank you, Fanny.
Thank you very much, Michael.
I've been talking with Fanny Howe, author of Love and I, published by Grey Wolf Press. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all podcast services. I hear it's on twice a week in Berlin. You can even listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, the wonderful Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is the truly capable Mario Diaz. And I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Tobias Wolf is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.